Yeah. Uh-huh. Listen up. Yeah, I can see you're new to this. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no experience. You're entry level. You ain't got no qualifications, baby. You're entry level. You're entry level. Your entry level, baby. Your entry level. Ooh, yeah.
Entry level. Yo, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. He's here. It's his last episode as not a dad, Nick Turner.
Hi.
He is. I have never seen Nick more in his head.
Yeah.
Your child's born on Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's a scheduled delivery. I'm very excited. I have been sitting with you for 50 minutes and you have not made eye contact once. What's going on? So Nick is in his head. Now he's turning off the air conditioning.
Now I'm producing your podcast.
Now he's producing it. We really appreciate it. But, you're having a kid this week.
I'm having a kid and I'm not having a good time. I don't like this week. It's crazy the things where you're like, you know, when you find out you're pregnant, you're like, it might as well be a million years away.
Right.
Like, even coronavirus is happening. It's like, we'll probably be dead. Like, it's nice that we get to have a little fun and congratulations before we all die. But then we didn't die. And then in July, I thought it was crazy because I was like, it's next month. Mm-hmm. You're like saying it's next month. And then August hit and you're like, it's this month. And that was so many weeks ago.
I remember.
Now it's not even next week.
I remember in July you were like, I'm having in less than 1 month, I will have a baby. And now it's like in like 70 hours, you're a dad.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of good people I know, smart people that never had kids. And I think about that. You know, it's weird. It's like when you're an atheist and you're like, but Spielberg goes to church.
Right.
Where does he know?
Yeah.
That I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm excited. The entry level listener fan base, follow Nick, tweet at him, let him know you support him. I mean, it's tough for me to. We just found out how you're doing. I'm doing good.
No one asked. Yeah, I know. It was your birthday, and I didn't care.
It was my birthday yesterday. Yeah, you didn't even. You are my best friend. You did not even say happy birthday.
I didn't say anything.
And I did not mind. This is the first birthday I haven't camped on in like.
But also, you were having the time of your life yesterday. And
the reason why is because Kyle Mooney's wedding.
Yeah.
With Kate, his wife, who rocks, and it was great. It was perfect because
Kate, his wife, who I don't appreciate.
Kate. I feel like I was more invited because Kate. Mm-hmm. Kate and I are Kate rules.
Kate plays Christine.
Yeah,
that was a movie she made.
She made a lot of movies. She rocks.
Yeah, but that was one of them.
Either
I think it was
way,
the most famous one.
Here's what I recommend everyone does for their birthday. You have your buddy have a wedding,
yeah,
and gather everyone,
yeah,
around,
yeah,
and then
except for me,
late,
yeah,
into the night, your girlfriend lets them know that it's your birthday.
Oh,
and
that's
so
nice.
It was a slow play. I didn't mean it, but then some were like at like, I don't know, like 10, she was like, oh, it's fucking Brooks' birthday. Or,
yeah,
whatever. And everyone's like, it's your birthday. I was like, it is my birthday. It
that's,
was
summer's
so
great.
Fun.
I mean, summer, especially when it is summer, mm-hmm, it's so nice to have summer.
Yeah. It was super fun. I had a great time. It was, you know, I was talking with Nick Rutherford about it. I go, nobody got too wasted. And then I'm like, we're all 40. Like, I'm 35, but like, we're all like, we shouldn't be getting too wasted at weddings anymore. Like, what do we, I'm proud that nobody blacked out at my friend's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 20-year-old move.
You know, it's funny. I went to Jason Stein's wedding last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the thought, maybe I should get some Coke.
Oh, my God.
Maybe I'll get some Coke and
no,
bring it to the party.
What?
It's not a Nick Turner move.
No.
But I thought, but I was just like, I played it out in my head, and I was like, I don't think I could find a single person who would do it with me.
can't. We're old. We are old. We're not young.
Yeah.
But it was super fun. I had a great time. I woke up this morning, 8 a.m., finished White Lotus. You had told me to watch White Lotus. Incredible. We discussed it. Guys, I'm not going to say White Lotus is the best show because it was pushed on me like that. But I will say it's a fun show. And
it's certainly like the best show of the moment.
It's the best show of the moment.
Best show of the summer, I would say, hands down.
It is. If you look at it from the point of view of it was created during the quarantine and shot because of the quarantine, it's great. It's the best quarantine show. Mm-hmm. 1,000,000%. So Nick and I have been discussing that. You know what? I feel like how you're nervous about your baby and how like, oh, we had a baby. It's 1,000,000 years away.
We don't even know what it's named, Brooks. Right. We don't have a name. People say, what's the name? And I say, we're not saying. We don't have one.
Incredible.
I've offered it on my podcast. Name my baby, like, for a fee, obviously. I would, for $10,000, I would name it goldennugget.com. If anyone has any ideas, email me at nickjturner@gmail.com.
Despondent, broken Nick Turner is the funniest Nick Turner I've ever
met. I don't care. Just give me money. Maybe I will get a tattoo on my baby. Not tattoo, but I'll put him in a onesie of your choice. I'll dye his hair. Whatever's legal. I know you can dye his hair because people dye dog's hair. And no one has a problem with that. So I know you can do it to a baby.
You know, little Hulk Hogan.
Just give me money for my baby.
Dye job. Oh, gosh. It's so funny. So how you feel about your baby? I sold a TV show a while ago, and I'm now writing it.
Tell me more.
I
met your dad's boss, by the way.
Yeah. So my dad moonlights, Jim. Shout out Jim. Doesn't moonlight. Summers as a fireworks dealer.
I would say main job.
He's a teacher in the
he's
summer.
Still.
He retired.
I thought he retired.
I feel like Jim is. I feel like my dad will retire more times.
My
than
mom's
Michael.
A teacher too. She doesn't go to school.
I'm just saying my dad will retire more than Michael Jordan. I feel by the time he's done.
That's funny. How old is your dad?
I don't 50. So he's like 63 or 64.
63 or 64.
I'm not sure. Great son. But Thomas, my cousin, was out here visiting. And Thomas. Who's in charge of all the fireworks stands.
Yeah.
And it was funny. We went out and ate at ramen, and you found out that Thomas, my 26-year-old cousin, who's from Missouri, who's a sweetie, was Jim Whelan's boss in the grand scheme
of things.
And Nikki couldn't stop laughing.
So funny.
Long story
Although,
short.
Also, you called me. You said, hey, we're going to go get dinner. Do you want to come with us? It's me and what I thought was Whitmer Thomas.
And Thomas is my cousin's name.
And I thought you meant it was you and Whit. And I was like, great. And then when you said you were here, I said to Lyra, hey, you should come out and show Wit your belly.
No, it was my cousin.
Because
Tom.
She knows Wit very well. Yeah. And I just can't stop thinking about what if Lyra had come out to show your cousin her
Thomas,
belly.
Yeah. Well, it would have been great. He would have loved it.
He would have loved it.
We're talking about this because I sold a show. My dad selling fireworks is a big part of the show. And it's
he
due.
Is the whole show. The show is basically
the Jim
you
Whelan
went
show.
To Fox
I sold
and you were like, okay. Can you please give me a show? My dad's crazy.
I basically told Fox what my dad's like, and they said, yep. So I'm writing that show.
Yeah.
And I'm in that was in February.
I tell people, I tell executives what my dad's like, mm-hmm. and they're like, well, that must be nice. Goodbye.
Either way, that was in February. Things are due Tuesday, and it's exactly like your baby, where I'm just like, it was fun to get to sell it. Now I'm, this is scary now. Like
it's awful. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, I mean, it's entertainment in general. You know, it's like every step is smaller, and mm-hmm. more people fall off.
Right.
And when you fall off a step, boy, you fall all the way.
But I'm excited. I like what our outline. I like. Your baby, and we're going to have a great week, Nick.
Oh, my God.
That's the only thing that matters.
Oh, my God, Brooks.
What?
Do you need a baby for your show? Are you? This could be perfect.
Okay.
Do you need a baby? I'm sure. Write a baby in there.
Okay, you got it. I'll write. You know what? Normally I write for friends, but I'm going to write for unborn babies.
I don't need to be a part. Not anymore. It's not my life anymore. My son is who I am begging bookers to put on stand-up shows now.
I told my, so my nephews are part of the show because my brothers are Brad Bren Brooks, and then my brother had kids, and he named them Lincoln, Landon, and Layton. And the joke is he's repeating the cycle. It's not a joke. It's real life. And Fox like that. So they're in the show.
Nice.
And they asked me, he was, my nephew was like, hey, if your show's on TV, do I get paid? And I said, if my show is on television, I will pay you so much money. Yes.
Sure, you get $1,000 every time it airs.
Exactly.
How about that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I told him. I was like, if my show is on TV, you win 1,000%. You get so much money.
Absolutely.
What do you want? Mm-hmm. You got it. Mm-hmm. Because guess what? I don't care. I'm very happy.
Have so many fucking slashes if your show makes it to air.
Yeah. What do you mean slashes?
I mean, you get paid as actor, writer, creator,
producer. Yes, it's like it would. I mean, I'm being very frank right now. I'm writing with my friend Isaac, and we're sitting in our office, and I told him in the office,
Isaac, like, Asimov, you should say,
Isaac Rentz.
We got him back.
Isaac Rentz, he rules. And I was like, we're sitting in this office, and I'm just like, if this works, if what we're doing in here in these next 3 to 6 months works, we're millionaires.
Yeah.
And it's like so insane mm-hmm. that someone is like, if you do a good job, you mm-hmm. do get to get this much money. Mm-hmm. And I hate it because mm-hmm. I'm very nervous mm-hmm. that it will fuck it up. Mm-hmm. That being said, let's get to listener mail.
Yeah. You know what, Brooks?
What?
I don't think almost anything works.
Yeah.
But I think this is going to happen.
I think the show's fucking great. Dude, here's what I told. And I won't give any more about the show because it hasn't even been announced. It's just the first time I've talked about it. I was writing with Isaac, and I stood up, and I was literally just stood there, and I was like, I think this is, what if we, I said, what if we were writing a fucking hit? Yeah. Like, what if this is a fucking hit? It's going to be nuts. And it's very exciting. And if it doesn't work, I'll be open about that,
I'll never forget, last day of shooting my pilot.
So Nick made one for Comedy
Central. Yeah, it was me and Whitmer Thomas, not your cousin. Mm-hmm. We were shooting the courtroom scene. So we were in some courtroom. Mm-hmm. And after that wrapped on the last one, I was talking to the head of the production company.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, I just like, I have a feeling, you know, these things, and I can tell, ooh, you know, it's like this one, mm-hmm. this one's special. Like I can tell, like this one's going to be something.
Uh-huh.
And they had previously made Chappelle's show, mm-hmm. you know, they made a bunch of shows, but anyway, that was like their big hit.
yep. It's not,
I forget how this story ends.
Well, it ends with,
but anyway, that being said, it's such a great idea.
Thank you. You know what? So I shot a pilot. This is Talking Shop with Nicky and Brooks. I shot a pilot on ABC, and in it, I played the quirky. I played the Kramer. It was 2016.
Did the audience have to clap when you entered?
I made them clap. They didn't have to. But so Thelma Hopkins was on Family Matters. She played the mom in this show.
Hmm.
And she said at the
Who is she on Family Matters?
She's the aunt.
Oh.
Yeah.
They got kicked off the show with her daughter.
I'm not sure what happened.
No. They just, at one season, they rewrote it and they never existed.
So either way, she rules. We're at the after party, and she, same exact thing. She's like, guys, I've done a lot of these, and this one feels like...
I haven't said this since the Family Matters.
That's almost what she said. Like, guys, this feels like Family Matters. It's like what she didn't say that exactly, but I was just like...
Incredible.
And then, you know, obviously not picked up, and I believe in nothing. So, that being said, I'm excited to work. I love working right now. It is very fun. I'm excited for your baby. It's all great. Let's get to this week's listener mail.
Okay,
we got
great
listener mail, and we have an even better episode. Well, actually, you know what? God. Great listener mail, great episode. So this listener mail, and if you want any of your emails read, email entrylevel@brookswheelan.com. Tell us about your terrible jobs. This one is nuts. This is like a unique, incredible, bad job that I needed context for. I've been going back with this guy for about a month so I could get context on what the fuck he was talking about. So it's from James. He goes, big time listener, easily my favorite podcast. Love that. Shout out. I first started tuning in while I was doing this crazy job on a quote unquote Polar Express show that lost a copyright battle and was sued for millions of dollars and had to be rebranded as The Train to Christmas Town. So I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Well, there was a movie called Polar Express.
I know. So wait, hold on. He goes, I had to play this knockoff Tom Hanks.
I will not hold on.
I had to play this knockoff Tom Hanks conductor character on this old historic railroad near Mount Hood in Oregon. And then, so I stop writing. I email back. I go, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you mean? Like, you're playing Tom Hanks, but it's a moving train? What? How? What is this?
Wait, is this in real life?
That's what I asked. So I said, explain. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. He emailed back. He goes, yes, this is confusing in retrospect. He goes,
because I'm like a Grinch in my house, but I don't need to pay Jim Carrey.
Right. So he goes, it's a real train. It's an old logging railroad they used a long time ago. Before that, they would float logs down the river. The snow in the river is really scenic. So what it is a train that goes back and forth, but it's like a dinner show.
Oh.
So you're on
the Polar Express. Yeah.
And I'm like, this is incredible. He says, but after 70 runs, it gets old, just like the fucking cave. Cave's fun to give three tours of. Tour 10,000? Fuck this shit. He said, it's more like dinner theater on a train than anything else. I'd only been on subways and modern transit, so it was nuts to figure out. The cars were cool. One was a double-decker. A sold-out show means hooking
one
up.
One of the cars in the train?
One of the trains was a double-decker. One he says, a sold-out
cars.
Show. Train car.
Right.
So they hook up.
Yeah, okay, all right. Cars.
Yeah, a sold-out show means hooking up eight cars and they're packed, but we also did a lot of four-car runs. Since Warner Brothers owns Polar Express, they put a stop to a train calling it that. Hood River Railroad then wrote their own picture book called The Train to Christmas Town and sold it on the train in the gift shop.
Oh, my God.
And these are so many workarounds.
That's great.
This is so fun. Okay, so then now he's back to his original email. He goes, I listen to the podcast between quote-unquote runs, and we do four a day. So he's doing 4 days, 70 shows for a whole season. Everything imaginable happened. Santa got drunk, the elves were dirty high school locals, and the polar bear was fired for being inappropriate, and entire families got hammered in matching pajamas. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. If I'm riding a Polar Express train that's a dinner show, I'm getting wasted. That sounds so fun.
As someone who works there.
Both.
Yeah.
Attending or working there. He said the cops even pulled over Santa one time in full costume while driving to where the train picked him up on the route. So the kids could see him outside. I don't understand. So the train picked up Santa. He goes, Santa would then get on the train, headline the fuck out of the show, working every kid in every car. Sometimes we had four Santas hidden in the station if we were sold out. I said the Trump impeachment was going down, and Santa asked the kid what they wanted for Christmas, and the kid replied, a white nation. This is insane.
Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Where's Fort Hood?
I'll tell you, anywhere that's not Portland in Oregon is
Fort Hood.
Racist.
Oh.
I don't think I'm being crazy when I say that.
Okay.
Oregon's nuts. Oregon is
all right.
Hillbilly town.
Yeah.
Besides, you know, it's a land of extremes. I'll just say that.
That's
Oregon is a land of
no,
extremes.
No, that makes sense because Austin is the weird part of Texas.
Right.
That must be why Portland is weird.
Keep Portland weird.
Yeah.
You mean reasonable.
Not yeah, different from our neighbors.
He said, the money was shockingly good for my role, and there was little to no acting work in Portland. So he lives in Portland. So I just toughed it out. Will I do it again? Absolutely, maybe.
Was he surprised that there was little to no acting work in Portland?
I don't know. James?
I moved here because I thought all the movies were shot
this
here.
Is where they shot.
Portlandia.
Yeah, they do shoot it there, actually.
Yeah, but
and shout out to Shrill. Hung out with Edie Bryant last night. Big fan of Edie Bryant. Had a nice time.
Okay, kind of a left turn there.
Well, she shoots Shrill in Oregon.
Okay. Whitmer Thomas in Shrill.
Oh yeah, dang. There was that's what.
Hey, that's something Whitmer Thomas says. Dang, dude.
Oh, dang. I have not seen Shrill, and Summer has, and she was like, "All of Shrill is here," and I was like,
"Oh that's
cool.
funny. That's very funny."
Yeah. But I should watch it because I heard it's
Connor.
Great. So James continues. My part of the show would be over at the halfway point, and I'd find an empty train car and just listen to Brooks and Nick get buck. So he's listening to us.
There we go.
I love it, James. There we love go. It. It was the best. One time I even wrote in, but I just talked about a silly job at Target when I got locked in the store. Meanwhile, I'm in a goddamn Christmas war zone. So he's doing the job you should email about. Email, but he's too in. He doesn't realize that this job is crazy because he's involved.
He's emailing about Target.
Yeah. Kristen Bell was on the train one time and she was not happy.
Yeah.
He said she was not happy with me when I walked
back.
Was
she trying to solve a crime?
I don't know. She said walk back in the train car when I didn't realize it was her and just wanted to double check the pod, help me get through this, and still does. I says, Mike's with my buds every night, chumming through bullshit. It's the best. I just listened to the Ian, Carmella, and Kurt Neal episodes. Shout out to Oregon. And they're so awesome and valuable. Yeah. Now I run a few small
Purple Gang.
Yeah. Now I run a few small cannabis farms. And make all the trimmers listen to entry level. That's great. I can't imagine going into work and then your boss playing this podcast where it's just people saying how much they hate their jobs.
This guy needs to start a podcast.
You should. He says, fuck the cave, Prefontaine forever.
Yeah, rules.
You rule, James.
That's awesome.
You run fucking cannabis farms. You're Tom Hanks on the train to Christmas Town. You got it all figured out. You're incredible. We're big fans.
I hope he fits in like some other Tom Hanks references on there. He's like, you know, catch this train if you can.
Wait, time out. So did you watch?
Terminal.
Have you watched the movies that made us about Forrest Gump yet?
Of course I have.
Okay, me too.
You know that I have.
I know, but that's why I'm bringing it up. So listeners, if you haven't, because you know, we were like, how did Tom Hanks come up with this? Like, a stupid is a stupid.
Yeah.
How did he do that? I know now too. I didn't know. If you haven't seen the thing, I'm going to spoil it. Watch it anyway.
It's not really a spoiler.
It's not a spoil. It's just like the kid they hired to play young Forrest Gump talked like that. That's how he talked. So Tom Hanks is like, I'm just going to talk like a little kid, but as an adult.
Yeah.
It's insane how
incredible.
I was like, how did he do it? Then he's just like, I don't know. That guy sounds like it.
It's so funny.
It's so funny.
Some kid, not even an actor, just like some kid.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Incredible. All right. We got a great episode this week. We won't keep you in suspense anymore. It's one of my favorites. It's really great. It's fun. I look up to him. Sandy Danto is on the gosh dang
podcast. Nothing's more fun than a little Danto.
And since I'm writing so much right now, we had to do it at night. He came over 9 p.m. at night.
Wow.
It's harder to do this podcast when you have a job.
That's when the Danto's just getting started.
Danto
though.
Was coming in. He's being funny. Nighttime podcast. Really appreciate it. One of the best dudes. One of the coolest
dudes.
Yeah,
he's really fun.
And yeah, it was a fun interview. I love him. Guess what he did?
Barry Rothbart introduced me to Sandy Danto.
Ooh.
Yeah.
A little BR reference.
Yeah.
I think I told Summer the last wedding I was at before Kyle's last night was Barry Rothbart's.
You know what? Last week at Jason Stein's wedding, mm-hmm. guess who I hung out with? Barry Rothbart.
What?
Yeah, that's right.
Guess who moved out and is no longer my upstairs neighbor?
Barry Rothbart.
Barry Rothbart. Right on. We're Barry Rothbart fans. We're fans, but most of all, actually, you know what? Barry doesn't listen to this. Fuck Barry Rothbart. We love Sandy Danto.
Oh, for sure.
We're
yeah.
Sandy Danto.
That day, I said goodbye to Barry Rothbart.
Yeah.
And I said hello to Sandy Danto.
100%. Enjoy this incredible episode. And hey, if you want a mug, the mugs are for sale. If you want to name Nick's baby, it sounds like what was it? What were you thinking? .com?
Brooks.com. Oh, Golden Nugget.
Golden Nugget.
Yeah. And if you think Nick Turner's having a baby, he doesn't have any money. Well, join my Patreon at patreon.com/getrichnick.
Incredible. Congrats, Nick. I can't.
Thank you.
Next
I love
week,
you.
I love you too. I don't know if you'll be on the podcast next week because you'll have a baby.
Oh, I'll be on the podcast.
Next week.
Me on the podcast.
You know what? I just
come,
got
you
excited.
Come over.
I got goosebumps. You know how the
you
end,
come over.
How White Lotus ends and you're like, I need the next episode? That's how I feel about next week's episode.
Bring me my cigarettes and I will be on the podcast.
Nick said he wants a cig. He's tired. Tell people your new stance on cigars.
Okay, so cigars are terrible. I smoked a Cuban, my first Cuban, at the wedding last week. I woke up with a sore throat so bad I thought I had COVID.
Right.
So I'm done with it. I want normalize bringing new dads. It's a boy cigarettes.
I told Nick, you made my.
I'm stressed out. Give me a cigarette.
Congrats on your having a baby. I'm going to get you and Lyra both your own pack.
Two
of
packs.
Smokes.
Incredible.
Each of you.
We'll get through that by 2025. No problem.
All right. Stay tuned next week when Nick Turner has a baby.
Yikes. Yikes.
Welcome to this week's episode. He's here. He's in my apartment. I'm excited. It's at night. Sandy Danto.
Hey, man, thanks for having me.
Yes, this is great. We were just talking about how you lived on couches for a long time.
I did, because I was hosting Couch Crashers, and I just thought, why am I going to have a revolving door of Couch Crashers when I could go and couch crash on other people's couches?
All right, let's find out all about this. So Sandy Dance is a great comic. He's very fun. We ran into, like, I've always loved you as a person in a comic.
Likewise.
But we don't really hang out.
No.
But that's how this business works. It's like you just see people, you're excited to see them, and then
mutual
you,
admiration.
Yeah. So we did a show together the other night. Mm-hmm. Very fun, very exciting.
Very fun.
And then actually that show wasn't great.
It was a terrible show, but it was one of those shows that all the comics were having fun.
Yeah.
In spite of it, which is great, because a lot of the time when it's sparsely attended, mm-hmm. people tend to get down on it.
We'll
and shit
snap
on it.
At the yeah. people who decided to come.
Yeah.
This show sucks. I'm like, well, these guys came. What are we doing?
Right. You turn on the people who are actually having a good time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What's wrong with you that you're having fun at this thing you're supposed to have fun at?
That's what I think maybe COVID helped us with, is like appreciating any time we're on stage.
I think the right people do that. And then it goes both ways, because people go on stage for sure appreciate it much more, and then the people in the audience, there are some who are like, I'm just glad to be out, mm-hmm. and others who are like, I'm just gonna lean into my absolute worst inclinations.
Yeah, there's a lot of fights in stadiums. It's yeah. great. I'm like, what are we doing, guys? We haven't been, don't come out fisting.
Don't get us into a lockdown over bad behavior.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but see, but so I think what makes great episodes of this is this podcast is when I have admiration and in friendship with a person, but don't necessarily know much about them. And that's the case here.
Yeah.
So, Sandy Danto, where are you fucking from?
I'm from the Detroit area.
What?
A suburb called West Bloomfield that I am embarrassed about and have a lot of baggage from.
Okay. This podcast is made for baggage. This should be called What's Your Baggage?
Oh, that's a great idea.
So, I also, if you aren't familiar with this podcast, make it about me, too. I used to go to Farmington Hills to visit a girlfriend's. Her family was from there.
I grew up right on the school district edge between West Bloomfield and Farmington Hills.
Okay. And to me, it was an affluent suburb. They ran Bikram Yoga Studios pre, like, multiple documentaries that he's raping. So I bet they're just, I don't know now, but I bet that they're just hot yoga.
He did
now.
Some destination raping in Farmington Hills. Yeah.
So what was it like growing up? Like, explain Bloomington or
Bloomfield, West Bloomfield.
West Bloomfield.
All right. So there's like tiers. Farmington Hills and West Bloomfield are kind of on the same tier. They're affluent, competitive, insular sort of, predominantly Jewish communities, but there's a lot of Christian Arabs, and obviously you can't go anywhere in America with lots of white people. And then it was starting to get more diverse, though, because there were more black people moving in from the city, which is great. And there was a couple Japanese kids, a couple Indian kids, but that's about it as far as diversity.
So I get it, but like, why do you have problems with it? Just
because I grew up in this insular, competitive, gossipy Jewish community, and I was the kid that smoked cigarettes before everybody and smoked pot before everybody and drank before everybody, which sounds like I'm bragging, and I am, because it's fucking cool to do that shit when you're like 13.
Right.
But, you know, I got alienated from my friend group, and I wasn't allowed to hang out with other kids, and I would hear rumors of other parents talking about me. Like, there was a rumor I was sick in sixth grade.
Okay.
And there was a rumor that I was in rehab for heroin.
Whoa.
I'm 37. I don't know where to get heroin. I wouldn't know where to get heroin in a suburb of Detroit at 12 years old.
I mean, that's so nuts. That is crazy. Like, yeah, because I grew up in a poor town in Iowa, and they'd be like, I don't think anyone knew. Like, the heroin was like, that's only in Seattle.
Right.
That's
right.
All. You only know how to get that if you do the grunge.
You should do the grunge.
That's it. Okay, so you grew up there. It sounds like, to me, close to Detroit, but it sounds like for you, very far from Detroit.
You know, what I say to people, because I've learned if I say I'm from Detroit and actually run into somebody who's from Detroit mm-hmm. proper, they're like, oh, yeah, what part? And then I get shamed because I'm from the suburbs. But it's like Encino is to L.A.
Right.
Or like Scarsdale is to New York.
Sure. But the difference between I would never, someone from Encino, I'm like, yeah, you are from L.A. But New York and Detroit are like cities. L.A. sprawls.
Right.
Tim Robinson has a real problem. He never will say he's from Detroit. He's from the suburbs. And I don't
know. That's what I say, too.
Yeah. He's from the suburbs. Yeah. You know, I'm like, well, just because like in my
the baggage has tears.
Yeah.
Because I've got the complex with like my own little suburb. But then I love Detroit. I think it's very cool, but I would never want to live there. Mm-hmm. But then if I tell people I'm from Detroit, I know that I'm not, so that has its own baggage that comes with it, and it sounds like Tim has that too.
Well, yeah. And also, you grew up when like Detroit was literally a punching bag.
A punching bag and a literal cesspool. Like, we'd go to hockey games growing up, which were downtown, mm-hmm. and my mom wouldn't let me wear, I got Air Jordans for Hanukkah. She wouldn't let me wear them. She's like, they're going to get stolen off your feet. I was like, I'm pretty sure no one's going to steal a kid size 8 Air Jordans that don't, they weren't even big enough to have the air bubble. They were like, it was just like the sole with a painted on air bubble.
Okay.
And I wasn't allowed to, she's like, you grew up in Detroit in the suburbs and your parents are racist because they're afraid. They grew up during the riots and they're afraid of all that. And they just don't, that's just how they understand it.
Okay.
And it's weird because you, in most other suburbs of big cities, Chicago, New York, L.A., St. Louis, did I say Chicago? Or
doesn't
whatever.
Matter.
For cultural reasons, you go into the city
mm-hmm.
for a concert, for a play, for food, whatever. Doesn't happen in Detroit.
Okay.
You'd go to Detroit maybe once a year, once every couple of years for something.
So what
and it was tense.
Yeah,
it was tense. Your parents would rush you into wherever you were going.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even leave Iowa, like, because it was a big, like, I was like, Dad, can we go to the Cubs game? He's like, where would we park? Where would we park? We were gonna find parking in Chicago. You're nuts. But here's a quick side note. Kid Rock, what was that like when he came up for you? Because I loved Kid Rock. Devil Without a Cause came out in 1999. My older brother's senior in high school. He loves this shit. But you are much closer to it.
I loved Kid Rock. I loved Kid Rock's music.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was, you know, in the scene that I grew up in, I wasn't like loud and proud as a Kid Rock fan. It wasn't like in my high school, everyone was like, Kid Rock represented was way more Eminem.
Oh, people yeah.
Everyone was really into Eminem and then closetedly into Kid Rock and then maybe even to a further extent and sort of as a novelty Insane Clown Posse.
Incredible. See, I'm so Midwest rock trash that I'm just like, Detroit, early 2000s, Kid Rock, right? And you're like, actually, there was the megastar, Eminem. Like, oh, I forgot about it. Yeah, like... that all tracks. Okay, so this is a show up about jobs. What was your first job that you had? Like, what type of jobs could you get out there?
I had some pretty interesting jobs growing up. I babysat from the time I was 9.
Did you like it? You seem so nice that you would have loved it.
Love babysitting. I'm the oldest of 4.
Okay.
And I've got a brother 3 years younger, a sister 7 years younger, and another sister 9 years younger.
All right.
So when I was 9.
You got that big bro combo. You're a good big bro.
I'm a good big bro.
Changing diapers, probably.
Oh, yeah. Been changing diapers since I was 9.
Incredible.
Actually, since I was 7.
That's too young.
That's way too young. Yeah. I definitely fucked it up.
That's on your parents.
Been causing blowouts since I was a very young man. But then I was a little league umpire.
Terrifying. I umpired one game, got yelled at, said, I can't do this. Were you good at it or were you bad at it?
I just didn't. I had calluses from being labeled. So when anonymous parents who I didn't know would yell at me, I'd just be like, whatever.
Okay.
I'm calling the games.
Yeah.
I'm the authority figure now.
Wow. You know? Yeah.
It was empowering for me.
That's fun.
I was the catcher in Little League that would talk shit to the batters, and I would get in trouble for that.
Yeah.
So I was just prepared for anything.
Nice. As an umpire.
Then I worked at the local rollerblade / putt-putt / arcade.
This sounds like
complex.
The dream gig when you.
He was the best.
Okay, fill me in on this, because it's rare that like you want a gig that sounds great and it turns out to be great.
It was awesome. It was owned by my friend's parents.
That's how we get nepotism in there.
But that's not how I got the job. I just applied for the job and I got it.
Sure,
and
sure,
it turns
sure.
out,
yeah.
I worked the concession stand that was connected to the prize booth, so I did both, which was pretty cool. I stole a industrial-sized black fluorescent black light fixture and bulb, so I had that in my room at home, which was pretty cool.
That's very cool. Like
when you're a teenage pothead, it's an essential part
right.
of your life, and it saved me like $200, so that was pretty cool.
That's incredible. Yeah, I remember my older brother had like a black light dragon poster, and like when they like found I smoked weed, there was I'm like, what are you? How are you surprised?
I had a 10-foot by 10-foot Jerry Garcia black light poster. I had and a Pink Floyd one and a Bob Marley.
You know what? That's what kids don't have anymore is those 10 by 10 posters.
Yeah,
they're so fucking big.
How on earth did that even become a thing?
And it was just a very short period of time work. I had a 10 by 10 Rage poster. I had a 10 by 10 Pearl Jam poster. And you rolled into college with that. That's how you made friends.
Yeah,
it was literally a flag. You know, it was pre-flags. That's all it was. Now flags suck. Fucking flags have been ruined. But before that, there were big posters that you hung in your dorm.
Your freak flag. Yeah. Letting it fly.
Yeah, I was taping it up with duct tape.
Yeah. You had no sense for aesthetics whatsoever. You just needed to let the world know that you love Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Or that you love Bob Marley.
Mm-hmm.
I had like
more of you love the idea
right,
of Bob Marley.
Right, right.
What's
yes.
your favorite Bob Marley song? He smokes weed, right?
Yeah.
So go on, sorry.
No.
So you did all this stuff. This sounds like great kid job shit.
Great kid. And then yes, great kid jobs. That sounds like something
did you
that
ever
you do on Epstein Island, kid jobs. But
well, hold on. Did you ever? No, we're actually, you know what? We're a pro Epstein podcast.
Like, oh, sorry.
He never got a fair trial.
that's true.
Yeah,
that's
he never went through
true.
Due process. Okay, did you ever hook up like a girl or guys when you were working at the prize booth? You know, like a friend rolls through, you could throw a couple extra fucking. Bouncy balls?
All the time.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
That's power. Oh, that's yeah. Oh, yeah. power.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Oh, I know. Got my friends in to do putt-putt for free.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
That's currency that you can't get in. Oh, wow. That's great.
You know what? I liken it to when you can get people into the comedy clubs for free. When you can, I'll get your name on the list.
Yeah.
It all started at U.S. Blades.
Yes!
When I could get people in and I could hook them up with, you know, those little, you turn them inside out and you set them on the table and they pop up
That's
high
what
in the
I
air.
I literally was trying to think what the fuck those
Is
are
Is there
called?
A name for it?
Jumpers? No one's, like little poppers?
Poppers. Poppers?
Yeah, poppers before we knew what poppers were.
Right, right.
But I literally was like.
Kid so poppers.
You'd flip a little, a little lid inside out, and then mm-hmm. it would you'd set it, and they were like frogs. You would just like, when's it gonna blow?
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to think of. So
they were like latex fireworks.
Yes, they. Yeah, I mean, like those, the little army guys with the backpacks
mm-hmm.
that you could throw
with the parachutes.
Woo!
Yeah,
man, that's
koosh
a dream.
Balls.
Koosh balls.
Knockoff koosh balls.
What was the most expensive thing for like 10,000 tokens? You could have a lightsaber or something like that.
It was like a shitty video game. You know, like before we just had video games on our phones, mm-hmm. and there was like Game Gear, Game Boy.
Right.
There was also those like handheld, just one game.
Yeah.
Or like it had like three
Tecmo,
games on
like,
it.
Like a bowl, like the football, like up and down game.
Yeah. That was like 10,000.
If it was like you spend
And I don't think it turned on.
Yeah, if you spend $700 here,
right.
you can buy a $40 game.
Right. Or like a giant stuffed animal is always like.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, we have a giant Minnie Mouse for my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It gets played with like when other kids come over and want to see it. Giant stuffed animals are the bane of everyone's existence.
Yeah, it's fun on paper.
Yeah,
fun
exactly. On paper. Fun on paper.
So you do all this. You go through high school. Where did you go after this?
Work-wise or
just
or
in general,
in my life?
In your life.
Then, well, work-wise, I was a busboy at a pizza parlor. Then I was a waiter at like the Max, you know, from Saved by the Bell. But like, but my high school's version of the Max.
No, I know, obviously. But like, we tried to turn a place into the Max called Bretto Pizza. And they just immediately banned us. They're like, you don't get to, like, eight of you came in and now the bathroom is just you threw toilet paper everywhere. No, this is not what they do at the Max.
No, that is not what they, if anything, they make it disappear with a magic trick.
Yeah, no, they're like, at no point do the kids in Saved by the Bell destroy this restaurant. And you guys are destroying this restaurant. You don't get to be here. So what was this one called?
Leo's Coney Island.
Incredible. I also didn't fucking know Coney Island dogs are from Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know that.
Detroit appropriated the Coney Island dog from New York.
Right, obviously. But like then they made it its thing.
It's Coney Island dogs to Detroit are what Philly cheesesteaks are to Philly.
Right.
Or like what tacos are to L.A.
Yeah, I just remember doing shows in Detroit and like not knowing that, and then like Tim was like, "Dude, go to this place for Coney dogs," and I was like, "What do you mean?" Like he's like,
"Lafayette, Coney Island, is that where he told you?"
It was right downtown near the Fox Theater. Yeah,
Lafayette. Yeah,
it was awesome.
Love about all of Tim's work is that there's hot dog, just hot dog little references everywhere.
He's a very hot dog heavy comic. So
that's the Detroit influence.
Yeah.
Or the Detroit area influence.
I gotta talk about corn more. So you are a waiter at the place all your buddies are hanging out?
Yeah, yeah.
How was that? Was it demeaning
or
was it great?
No, it was great.
Dude,
I was working and hanging out.
That's what I'm saying. It sounds like your high school job experiences, you're crushing it.
Pretty great. They were pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I also at summer camp in Canada got certified to be a lifeguard, and I lived across the street from the community pool that my mom ran, and so I got to be a lifeguard during the summer, and that was the best job ever.
I've heard. Lifeguard in a pool, greatest job you can have in high school.
It really truly is.
Lifeguard at the beach, nightmare. You actually have to do work.
Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. But at a pool?
Wow.
Yeah, where all the little kids are wearing floaties.
Yeah.
The worst thing that could happen is that a kid shits in the pool. Mm-hmm.
It's
actually the best thing that could happen because all you got to do is clean it up. Everyone has to go home for the day. You get paid for the whole day, and you get to go home early. It's the best.
That's what we learned.
Yeah.
Cheat if you're a lifeguard and you went out a day, shit in the pool.
You shit yourself in the pool.
Shit in the pool. Point at a little kid who you're like, I obviously didn't. So you'd have this fun job situation. Where do you go in life after high school?
Well, I should also mention that I did sell weed.
Okay.
In high school, briefly, then again in college.
Where are you getting it? Well, how does it go down?
At first I was getting it from one of the line cooks at the pizza parlor that I was working at.
And how much are you buying at a time?
Like an ounce.
Yeah, which like even now is too much weed, but like then you're like, I will go to jail for life if I am caught with this.
You think that you'll go to jail for life. It's really, it's way more weed than I could smoke in probably 3 years now.
Yeah.
I don't really smoke.
And it's also very just often. Like, it's a big bag. I've seen in college, the first time I saw what was quote unquote a zone is what it is. You want to see a zone.
An onion, zone. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, and I remember being like, we should close the windows. Like, you just showing me how much? Are you fucking crazy?
And it was always in those bags that don't close. You know the sandwich bags that don't close? You just kind of fold the flap. It's uneven flaps. There's a shorter flap and a longer flap, and you fold the flap over and lick. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, we're like,
why did they always just come in unsealed bags? It's the contents stink.
It's like, with the smelliest drug. And they're like, well, we're going to put this in what we also put Doritos on field trips in. We're going to put this, your life sentence in prison in a Doritos.
Not just your life sentence, but also in a lot of people's cases, your life savings.
Yeah. So you were making good money doing this? Or?
I left out a job for like 8 weeks after my freshman year of high school. I worked construction, and it was the best job ever because I only worked for like 4 weeks and I made like $10,000.
How? What?
I would wake up at 5 a.m. and go to work, and I was like basically just a gopher for these for this electrical contractor. Uh-huh. I would just like go fetch them stuff and like.
I'm just saying, how did you make 10 grand? I was a gopher.
Because it was like $15 an hour under the table, and I would work from 5:30 a.m. until 5:30 at night.
Okay.
5 days a week for 4 weeks. I don't know how the math works out.
But I understand. It probably felt like 10,000. It wasn't. There's no way. Because like I worked $9 an hour doing that, and I made what felt like $10,000. But it was like, you know, it's just, it's an insane amount of money. It's also the hardest work I'd ever done in my fucking life.
Very hard work, even though I was like just doing the bitch work of it. But like I just spend days painting scaffolding so they know which scaffolding was theirs at a project.
I'm just prying nails out of walls.
Yeah, exactly. Prying nails out of walls. Clean, like shop, sweeping up the shop, shit like that.
That was so
I got to drive a backhoe. That was the shit.
I fucked up the first day. They were like, hey, move this to over there. I was like jerking around on a backhoe over the new sod. They were like, oh my God. I'm like, hey man, how about someone shows me how to drive this fucking thing? It doesn't have a steering wheel. What are we doing?
That's so fucking funny.
I mean, it's so true. They're like, hey, right. Go, you move this wood over there in the backhoe. I'm like, I'd rather just care. They're like, use the backhoe. I'm like, I don't know how to drive a fucking backhoe.
They look like tractors for kids.
Yeah.
And they're so fun, but they're very complicated machines.
No, they're so, yeah. And I'm like, dude, I'm nervous in my fucking, in my Geo Prism. I don't feel comfortable in that. All right. So you do this.
So the reason I mentioned this is because it was the money that I had that I squirreled away from doing this that I used to buy my first initial. It was my venture capital into weed.
Okay.
And me and a friend bought it off a friend's older brother after I had left the pizzeria job, and he couldn't be trusted. So then I just kind of went off on my own.
All right.
And was like, It's not like I ever chose to do it, but I was just, people were always asking me because they knew I knew how to get weed.
Yeah.
And I was just sick of always.
You were being the middle. You're like, why am I
work?
Why am I the middleman? Why am I pointing you to the guy who you're going to give money to? Why don't I just be like, do you know how to get weed? Yeah, it's right here and it's this much money.
It was more just like, okay, if I buy this much weed and these many people ask me for it, I can get it for them. And just have some for myself for free. And that's how it begins.
Right. That's what I had a buddy who dealt weed. And he was like, all that happens is you smoke weed for free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you're like doing all this work. And you're just like, well, I guess I'm smoking weed for free and for like $100. And then it just kind of dominoes a little bit. You know?
What was that? What was the highest amount of drug dealing you got to that you were like, this is, I never thought I'd get here. I don't like this.
Well, in college, I was probably, what's crazy about it, and this is part of the reason I have baggage, because it was so looked down upon, high school and college, you know, not just smoking it, but selling it, very looked down upon. And now it's legal.
I mean, imagine if you're in jail. Imagine if you are in jail.
I think that's the lamest part of it being legal.
Yeah.
Is that people in jail for dime bags that have been there for decades.
Yeah.
It's fucking ridiculous.
It's insane. So what was your peak weed amount?
Pounds, like 2 pounds at a time.
How much money is that? Like, I don't even know.
Okay, so I don't know what it is now. I'm sure it's changed since it's become legalized. But I would buy pounds for like $2,000.
Right. And in college, that's
$2,500.
Yeah, that's more money than that's like you don't have. Yeah, that's crazy. That's
It was I have to say it's really fun when you're just like counting money on your bed and you're just like, this is more money than I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I can't say that there isn't the fun element of that. Even though I'm turning that money over to somebody else to get more weed, it's still really fun to have it in your possession, even just for a little bit.
And also, it's fun, like, even like, you know, when I would buy too much weed and I would just like, you know, I was like, yo, we'll just split this. Like, it is fun to give someone weed. You
Very
feel
fun.
Cool.
Yes.
You feel
yes.
cool.
Yeah, you do feel cool.
So where did you go to college?
Indiana University.
Really?
Bloomington. Yes.
Now, I'm very familiar. Mm-hmm. I love Bloomington.
It's a great city.
Yeah. I'm a big Songs of Hiya fan. Okay. Jason Molina. Do you know that guy?
I've heard of Jason Molina.
He's a Bloomington dude who drank himself to death at like 38, which is hard to do.
Yeah.
You really got to go for it.
In Bloomington, though, I could see that not being as hard.
Mm-hmm.
I was a very heavy drinker. I went into college.
That's a cool campus, too. And what I like about Bloomington is what I also love about Iowa City, where I went. It's literally just for kids.
Yeah, yeah. It they both have very similar vibes. I've been to Iowa City. It was very cool. And they both have just this very, like, it's weird to see anyone older than 24.
Yeah.
And it's weird to see anyone younger than 17.
You age out.
Yeah.
You find out kids go to high school there, you're like, what? You know, and you find out kids have, like, my buddy lived there till he was 26, and he was like, it was the saddest I ever, I got too sad. Like,
you watch Van Wilder, and you're just like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to be there for, like, 7 years.
No.
But then, like, you have a friend that was supposed to graduate the year before that stuck around for the victory lap, and they're just, like, dying to get out of there.
Yeah. So, I like Bloomington. Why did you choose that? Where were we going to college for?
This is weird. I have very specific feelings about college. I shouldn't have gone because I didn't have an idea of what I wanted to do until, like, I always knew what I wanted to do, which was comedy.
Why?
But
when did you know you wanted to do comedy?
Because I always was able to just make people laugh without really trying.
But when did
hard.
You like, when did it click that you're like, I could make a living, not a living, but like I could, this, there's a career in this somewhere.
Okay. So I went off to college with the idea that this is my future. Mm-hmm. I got to take it seriously and work real hard. Like, I underachieved in high school. It was easy for me to get my grades up enough to get into a good school, but I didn't really try that hard, and I definitely could have gotten great grades if I had just tried it all. And I partied a ton in high school.
Yeah.
Did drugs, drank a lot. Like, my parents would just let me have parties in my basement every weekend, all
so
weekend.
So it sounds like for you and also for me, public high school, I'm guessing,
mm-hmm.
very easy for me.
Very easy.
Not at one time did I have homework.
If I ever had homework, it was very easy to just get done like minutes before class.
Exactly. So, but then I went to college and that was hard.
Well, I just had this concept, like, I floated through high school and college is going to be really, really hard. And I tried really hard and I got all A's that first semester. But I had this idea going into college that I wasn't going to party, that I was just going to be serious about school and maybe, you know, some weekends party a little bit, but really just, like, be focused on school. And then the first meeting on the first day, everyone was like, you look like John Belushi. John, but we're going to call you Belushi.
Oh, no.
And then it was just like, well, I guess I've got to be Belushi then. And,
yeah.
And I was.
I mean, yeah, Animal House is not a great movie to watch when you're a freshman because you, it's great and it's funny and you want to do it.
Yeah, you know, like.
And then the fact that people are like, you look like the funniest comedian, possibly of all time.
Right.
And you feel the need to behave like that, that's a lot of pressure.
It is, but it was pressure I lived up to. I could handle that. With great power came great responsibility, and I could handle it.
Good for you.
Unfortunately.
Good for you.
But that, like, later on in my freshman year, I was tripping on mushrooms just walking around campus, and people kept coming up to me and calling me Belushi and just, like, being friendly to me. And that's when I was like, okay, what am I naturally good at that I will not hate doing 20, 30, 40 years from now?
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, I've always wanted to do comedy.
Why? How come? Was it like just stand-up or SNL? I mean, we're like similar ages.
I grew up on sketch.
See, okay, yeah.
But then I did sketch and improv in college, and I was like, I can't be dependent on other people.
But here's the other thing, because we're similar enough in ages that Comedy Central was wildly important to why the amount of stand-up comedians who are our age, because they played Comedy Central Presents on a loop through college. And I would
that
just,
was the only content they had the rights
to. And I would
to.
Just watch fucking half hour after half hour after half hour. And I'm like bummed for kids now that like that doesn't exist.
Well, it's kind of just on Netflix and YouTube now.
Sure, it is. But like, I mean, just as back, it was just like, I don't know. There's a generation of us who are like,
for sure,
stand-up comedy seems attainable. And we all are 32 to 38.
But isn't that so weird how... Yes, I agree with you. And having that experience, like definitely high school, college, I would watch more stand-up, but elementary school, middle school, and still high school and college, I was way more into sketch.
Okay. Yeah, I liked SNL till I got to like college.
Yeah, same. Like, same.
Like, I want to do stand-up. Fuck that
same,
shit. Yeah.
Same. And then I did improv and sketch in college, and I was just like, unless the people you're doing it with are all on the same page and have the same sensibilities and sense of humor, it's not that fun to like have a power struggle or weird disparities in what you think is funny with the people you're doing it with.
And also in the Midwest, in places like Bloomington and Iowa City, when you decide, seems like we are the same age, like I'm going to make this my career. There's no one within 100 miles that has made that decision. That's your age. So correct. Everyone's like, this is kind of fun. You're like, this isn't fucking fun. This is my life now.
Right.
And so that's why stand-up worked for you, I'm guessing, and me. Because I was like, I can't depend on anyone to do this as much as I want to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I didn't start doing stand-up till I came out here. But I did a ton of sketch and improv before that. And I wrote stand-up material for years before I ever
tried it. That's great. I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I started writing stand-up in like sixth grade. And didn't, you know, it's just like...
I started writing poetry in sixth grade.
Incredible.
And then when I was in college, I was like, nobody likes poetry.
I remember I wrote one song in college. I was trying to be a lead singer. And woof. That's like a shudder in the shower.
I think I'm gonna do a podcast of just my cringy high school poetry.
You should, man. I can't wait. Do you remember what any of it was about?
Oh, mostly about my ex-girlfriend, who's now my wife.
Really?
And then like other like psychedelic abstract like trying to be fish lyrics type.
Okay. Well, I know you have to leave in a little bit to go to stand up. So
I got a little bit more time.
Okay, I want to get to how your original girlfriend is now your wife. That's fucking crazy. What led you? What did you major in college?
I double majored in communications and telecommunications because a lot of the credits overlapped.
Right, and so you double majored in two non-majors.
Exactly. the only reason, like, why is communications a major? So you can articulate better why you're a poor adult. What is the point?
I'm a huge proponent of only go to college if it is for a skill that you need a degree to get a job in, aka engineering. Medical, anything,
nursing,
lawyers,
legal,
things you need a certificate for.
That's what I was gonna say. That's what I was getting to. It's just there's no point in going to college if you don't know what you're gonna do. Go figure out what it is you're passionate about and then go get an education.
Right. Well, here's my
My parents forced me to go to college.
Well, here's my counterpoint is I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I was like, I'll just get an engineering degree, and that. Because it's such a tangible, you can use this to go move anywhere in the United States.
And very marketable.
Yeah. And so I was like, I got an engineering degree and then I can, I'm in charge of my life now.
Well, you're much smarter and more future thinking individual than I am.
That is my, your suggestion is go figure out what you want to do, then go to college for it. My suggestion is while you figure out what you want to do, get an engineering degree.
I would say engineering or nursing. Because
you can go anywhere.
You can go anywhere with a nursing degree. If you want to pursue something in the arts, you can work night shift nursing 3 nights a week and make a very good income and still have 4 days out of the week to pursue whatever it is
and
you want.
I will tell you what, the drunkest people I ever met ever in college.
Nurses party.
Nursing students.
Party.
Nursing students are the drunkest psychopaths
in the
world.
Not just the students. Professional nurses.
Yeah.
Hardcore partiers.
Okay. So you get this communications, telecommunications, but you're pursuing comedy.
Oh, and
time.
I minored in music, but I do not play.
None of this is surprising.
So, yeah. And so I just decided I'm going to move to LA. And I was trying to
Pick LA?
I was between LA and New York.
We
and
all
I
are.
Applied to a bunch of internships in New York and I didn't get them. And then I met the rabbi at Hillel at college, whose brother at the time was the CEO of National Lampoon, which is my first and only real day job as an adult that I've had.
Okay.
And she put me in touch with her brother. I got an internship there. I showed up on the first day.
Out here?
Yeah, out here in LA. That's what made the decision for LA because I got internship.
I was like, why? So you found a job. Right. That's how I got to move out here. I found a job.
Right. And they're like, oh, you look like Belushi. And then I got hired to be full-time staff just because I look like Belushi. Mm-hmm. And it was at National Lampoon. It was meant to be. And I worked there. And then I met Pauly Shore, who got me a job at the Comedy Store.
Because when I moved out here, I moved out here in 2009. I still look up to you, but you were already rocking and rolling at the store.
I was. My career peaked in 2009.
Mine 2013. I get peaks. But anyway, when I move out here, I'm like, you know, doing the fuck. I'm like going to the store. I'm hanging. So, you know, I'm just hanging all the time. And you're up all the time. How did this happen?
Okay, so back to my upbringing. A lot of the kids I grew up with but wasn't necessarily close friends with moved out here at the same time as me. And they're affluent. And Pauly seeks out kids from affluent backgrounds to intern for him, which is basically just free labor because he knows he doesn't have to pay them because they're getting help from their parents. And so a friend of mine who's super rich met him at a club, started interning for him, realized it was not what he wanted to do, and pawned me off on Pauly.
Okay.
And then I did that for Pauly. I would like work at National Lampoon all day and then at night go.
What was your job at National Lampoon?
At first I was an assistant, but I was terrible at that. So I failed up to just being on the creative staff.
Great.
I wrote, directed, acted,
and
produced.
At the time, what were they doing?
It was at the very beginning of YouTube. So we were just making, like, instead of doing the articles, we would do YouTube video. We would do sketches that were, you know, in place of, there wasn't a print version of the magazine. So we were that, but just making YouTube videos.
Any ones that I can post that you're proud of that you did there?
There are a bunch, yeah, but I think they took them all down off YouTube,
so
which is stupid because they all had over a million views, but I think they took them down because you start getting paid a lot once they're over a million views, and they probably didn't want to have to deal with the legal ramifications of us who were in the videos trying to recoup whatever money they were making off of them.
It sucks so
but
bad.
I'll send you some links. Some of them are on like Daily Wire and stuff.
Okay, yeah. There'll be a link to one thing you're proud of in this episode description. All right.
There's some good stuff.
So you worked there during the day. And
I would intern for Pauly at night.
Okay.
And
what does that mean?
I would go to his house.
Okay.
And sometimes...
Was this when he's living above the store?
No, he was living at his house above Runyon Canyon at the time.
Okay.
Which he still has, but he doesn't live at. And I would go through, he would tape record his material and I would have to dictate it.
I've never met Paul. I've heard he's a nice guy and a great guy, but I will say that's absolutely crazy.
Well, you didn't have to listen to what was the contents of those tapes. Because you would know it would validate that. No, he's one of my closest friends.
No, I'm saying, like, I've only heard nice things, but I'm like, that's wild.
Yeah, it was wild.
It's wild for me to even listen back.
But you know what? Like, even though he's fallen from grace, he was a big fucking movie star.
No, are you fucking kidding me, dude? He was my, like, Biodome is so important to me. Fucking Jury Duty, dude. Like, I'll try to have Pauly on at some point, but like, he created a persona in the same way like Kurt Cobain at the same, you know, like Kurt Cobain was this like guy and Eddie Vedder was this guy and Pauly Shore at the same time was this comic version of it.
Yeah.
Like he created a genre that was unlike anything that had ever existed.
Dude, you like Jury Duty? I'm working on the reboot Jury Duty 2 3D, bro.
Okay. So either way, I'm just saying I fucking love Pauly Shore.
I do too. And I'd like do his Christmas cards. I would pack his merch bags and do merch inventory. And I would like pick up Playmates from the airport in his Range Rover. I mean, it wasn't so bad.
No.
But then it was like I wasn't, I was so busy between my day job and then going to work for him. I wasn't doing any shows. I wasn't doing any mics.
You like lost why you moved here.
Right. So I was like, can you get me a job at the store? And he did. And so I started, that's when I started going up a lot.
So what was your first job? Like
my first job at the store was, I would take all the old, there was a room. It's not like the back employee bar, but I would take all the old VHS, Betamax, Hi8 tapes and little cassettes. And I would digitize them.
Incredible.
And I also sold weed there.
Nice.
Because that was much like the dorm situation where it's like it was built in, built in customer base.
Yeah, that's you. That's the quickest way to the top in LA is in anywhere.
It got me my first movie.
That's all I'm saying. It's just like likable guy that, hey, I'm stoked when this dude's around.
Yeah. You know what kids miss out on now, or anyone misses out on now, is the like the drug dealer that's like trying to get you to hang out with them for too long.
Right.
And you're like,
Pineapple Express did that perfectly.
What's that?
Pineapple Express?
Yeah, totally. Perfect. Yes, perfect. Yeah. But that's gone now because you just go to the store and you put hand sanitizer on, you touch an iPad, and you got your weed. Mm-hmm. But
not me, baby. I still find it from a weirdo.
Yeah. Well, I was that weirdo, but I knew not to like linger too
long. You were a great weed dealer. And how did it lead to your first movie? Like, what do you mean?
Oh, one of the guys I sold weed to was a producer, and he put me in my first movie, which was a Western, and I had to ride a horse. And he's like, you know how to ride a horse? I was like, yeah, sure.
Of course I know how to fucking ride a horse.
And then the first day on set, I was on a horse for 12 hours. I'd never ridden a horse before.
What was the movie?
Called The Sierra. I don't know if it ever came out. Right. It was an indie.
Sure.
But I was shooting guns on a horse. It was fucking badass. That's sick. And I got bucked off the horse.
Yeah.
And there was a shot where they needed to get a close up and they were shooting guns and the horse got scared and I was just riding it bareback as it was like running off and everyone's like, jump off the horse, jump. I was like, are you fucking nuts? And there were low hanging tree branches. Like, I got to jump off the horse.
Jesus Christ.
So I had to jump off the horse.
So let's get to how this all happened. So you start going up. You started stand up out here and you it sounds like you moved quick.
I did, but then I plateaued, and that's okay.
I'm not saying you plateaued. I'm just saying, like, you moved quick into getting.
Oh, yeah, I did. I went from, you know, I did mics, and I still did mics, like, years and years into stand-up. But
I didn't do mics in L.A.
I didn't really need to do a ton. I didn't really have to do those years and years of, like, drudging from open mic to open mic. I did that for a few months. Then I started working for Pauly. Then I started working at the store, and I would do mics occasionally, but I got my employee spots at the store, and I would get belly room spots.
I mean, you're getting real spots. Those are so much more important because I moved out here four Midwest years in. Mm-hmm.
And you lived in Chicago for a bit?
Yeah, and like realized that I don't think mics in L.A. help.
They don't.
Not going to do those.
They're counterproductive.
Yeah, I'm not going to do those, and instead I'm going to hang on write scripts, and I'm going to go up when I can get up and treat the once a week I'm up like I would treat, you know, six mics. Like, put that much importance into it.
Work smart, not hard.
Well, I mean, I was still writing, you know, but it was like, just like, these weren't fun. Versus I'd done fun mics. There are fun mics.
Sometimes they're, I don't know.
In the Midwest, I'm saying. In Chicago, mics ruled. Mics were fucking incredible.
Well, yeah. Because bar patrons were happy to hear that.
And also the other guys on the show were Kumail and Kinane and fucking TJ Miller. It was like oh, you were not seeing open micers. You're seeing like some of the best comics in the world. But okay, not about me. You do this. You start doing the store a lot. I show up. I'm like, Sandy Danto. I can't believe that's Sandy Danto. I remember thinking like, that's Sandy Danto.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Oh. And then so how, like, what starts snowballing to where like you get to quit your jobs?
Well, I got laid off at Lampoon. Because
it's a
shortly after that, the CEO got arrested.
Yeah, I was like,
and then the next CEO
got
arrested.
Your fault.
And they went to prison for like insider trading and securities fraud. And one of them had a Ponzi scheme going. So, and then, you know, I was just on the road with Pauly a lot, like 30 some weeks a year, and
I remember
working at the store.
I remember in 2000, this would have been 2007, Pauly came through Iowa City with Dave Attell. Oh, wow. Yeah, I would love to ask him about this because I remember it was at the Englert and it wasn't a free show, so I had to pay to see it. And, you know, I remember being so drunk. And, like, I'd done, like, three open mics that my friend had to, like, hold me down not to be like, let me do some material.
Oh, man. I mean, oh.
But I'm just saying, like, I remember being like, these guys must be friends. Now, then I get in comedy, I'm like, oh, those guys were paid so much money to do that show together. There's no way they said five words, you know.
I bet they were, like, I'm sure they're like chummy, but they're...
That's what I mean.
I've never heard Paulie in my 14 years of friendship mention Dave Attell.
That's like, all I mean. Not, they don't dislike each other. I'm just like, these guys must be best friends. Right. I'm like, no, these guys were each paid $30,000 to come co-headline this show.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
So you're now fully with Paulie.
Fully with Paulie, doing the store, doing shows around town, getting a little bit of acting work. Things are going well. And then one night in 2010, leaving the store, after I'd come back from Australia.
What were you doing in Australia? Tour?
I was on the road with Paulie. It was fucking amazing.
So fun.
I left all my weed at the store so that my roommate, if somebody needed it, could hook them up. Mm-hmm. And then taking it home that night, I got pulled over and I got arrested.
I did not know this.
And
how much weed?
Like a half pound or something.
Too much.
Too much. Too much for a medical marijuana card.
Yeah.
So then I was done selling. I was like, you know what?
How much does that cost to get out of?
It cost me probably like $10,000. It cost me most of the money I had saved up. And so then
it's like a DUI.
Yes. Yes. It was exactly like a DUI. I have a charge on my record. Mm-hmm. But it's just a charge,
right?
And I did like court ordered AA and drug and alcohol outpatient rehab classes, and it's gone.
Yeah,
but I had to get a lawyer.
No, it's a DUI. It sucks. It's
but it's not the end of the world.
No, it sucks. It's not the end of the world. You get through it, but you learn a big fucking lesson.
You learn a big fucking lesson. You also lose your job in the process. It's not just getting arrested. It's, well, now this is my income stream. I'm not going to like risk it again.
Right.
And so this is where the very interesting jobs come in.
Okay.
After that, I was a nanny.
For rich people? Obviously.
For a late night TV writer.
Okay.
For his son. They lived around the corner for me.
All right.
Really cute kid. And I love kids and I've got the experience with that. But then, immediately after that ended, I directed gay porn.
You did?
So I went from comic/weed dealer to comic/nanny to comic/gay porn director.
How? How do you get this gig?
A friend of mine from college owned a porn network.
Okay.
And in 2008,
which one?
Porn Pros.
Okay.
I think he still does. But in 2008-09, he called me up. He's like, yo, you... Ron Jeremy's coming in. You want to make $50? And I was like, wait, how?
What are you talking about?
He's like, I want you to play his son in the opening sketch of this thing, of this scene. So I did. It was cute. You know, it was funny. Informative. Kind of ruined porn for me. But
in what way?
Girl was like out of her mind. She's like, I don't know why they say everyone in this business has daddy issues. I never even knew my dad. So like, how could I have issues with him?
Oh, no.
And then she like... She was flirting. She was did not want to have sex with Ron Jeremy.
Well, who would?
Exactly. And she was like kind of flirting with me. I think she was hoping that it would be me instead of her. And that's not a brag. It was just a very bizarre experience.
You mean you instead of Ron?
Instead of Ron Jeremy, which is like an old, creepy, smelly, disgusting old man or like someone your own age.
Yeah,
I get that.
Yeah. Okay. So you just kind of like have a little inside to this biz.
Right. And so after things hit the skids a little bit for me, I emailed him because I had this whole tour in Canada I was supposed to do with Paulie.
You can't do it.
And you're not allowed to go into Canada if you have drug or alcohol or any violent legal charges pending. And my lawyer told me that, and I freaked out. And so I emailed my friend. I was like, do you have any jobs behind the camera? I have production experience, graphic design, whatever. And he called me. You know when you email someone?
I'm at a communications and a
And telecommunications.
I double major. Yeah, and music. I did music.
I could work on porn.
Yeah.
And music. Yeah, yeah. You need porn music? I'm about as well equipped to do that, too. you email someone, you don't expect to get a reply right away necessarily. Mm-hmm. He called me. He's like, I have a job for you. We just started a gay porn network. We need people to start working. I was like, ooh, I don't know. Let me call you back. And my friend Dan Madonia, who was sleeping on my couch at the time.
Okay.
One of my friends who inspired me to become a couch crasher. He's like, yeah, you got to do it. And he like pumped me up and talked me into it. Everybody later did I realize, of course he wants me to do it. If I don't have a job, he doesn't have a couch to crash on.
Right.
But I don't think that was his true incentive. But I shadowed, which was fun because I shadowed on straight porns. And then I shadowed on some gay porns. And I was just like, whatever. This is how a lot of people have sex. I'm just not privy to it until now. And it's fine. It is what it is. And I was like, both like learned a lot about myself. I learned that I'm not gay.
Okay.
Like, you never know. Like, I always was open to it. Like, it'd be cool if I was. Right. Especially, like, the first year I lived out here, I had horrible luck with women, and I was like, I wish I could just be gay. Maybe I am, and I just haven't discovered it yet. Yeah. But this closed that door for me. I was like, not interested in that for me.
Sure.
But also, I was just like, I realized I'm mature because I accept this as something that's great for other people, and it's really cool. And
yeah, you're a good person.
You know, like my immature self was just like, yeah, it's cool if you're gay, but anal sex is weird.
I mean,
you know?
You're a guy who grew up outside Detroit in the 90s.
Right.
Like you know, where being gay was a punchline to every movie we laughed at.
Yes. Boat Trip was one of the movies I watched that I didn't tell people I liked and thought was funny. And now I'm still ashamed of it for different reasons.
Okay.
But,
you do this. How long does this work?
So I do a shadow. I shoot one scene. I sneak into Canada. No problems.
Oh, okay.
While I'm in Canada. And the scenes pay like $300 to $500. And you're working for like 3 hours. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But you're just like making them sign paperwork, taking copies of their IDs to make sure they're of age, and setting up the lighting, and just taking stills, and then shooting with a camcorder. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's the job.
Art.
Pretty easy. Yeah, art. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Andy Warhol would have done this.
Yep.
And then I go to Canada, and while I'm in Canada, there is a male porn performer who does both gay and straight porn, who gets HIV. And so the whole industry shut down for like 5 weeks. Whoa. Until they test everybody and make sure. I mean, it's relevant because it's similar to like COVID, you know, you just got to like isolate it and make sure that no, it's not going to spread. And when I got back, everybody who had more seniority than me had to like pick up on the work that was available. And I was told no. And, I maybe got to do one more scene, and then my friend was like, look, you're either going to quit comedy and do this, or I'm not going to have you do this and fuck up your career.
That's a great friend.
Yeah, I think not. Like in 2020, 2021, it wouldn't fuck up your comedy career if an employer found out you directed gay porn.
No, that's not what
But like back in 2010, for sure it
I
would.
I thought he just meant this is going to take too much of your time.
I think it was a little bit of both.
Okay, because
I was a little bit of both.
Yeah, like
he wanted a commitment from me.
Yeah, that's what I took it as. Is he
but he also was afraid that it would come out that I worked in the porn industry and it would cost me work.
It would actually blow you up now.
It would. Yeah. Now it would.
Yeah.
Now it would. Yeah. But in 2010, if I had done that and then got cast on like an ABC or Disney
thing. Which you're auditioning for.
Yeah, which I was. Yeah. And they found that out, it would cost me the job.
Yeah. Okay. So you bounce on that and then you refocus on comedy?
Refocused on comedy, just did the road and started couch crashing. So the stakes were lower. And then I was like, I had that in my mind that like, I'm going to go to New York and it's going to solve all my problems.
Yeah.
You know, that like lateral move that you think is going to just make all the problems
go
away.
I'm not that good at comedy. You know what will make me great? Moving to a harder city.
Yeah. Moving to a city where I've got to literally start over.
Yeah.
So I tried to do that.
Yeah.
And I saw Justin Long breaking up a bum fight in the East Village. I was walking around the East Village one day.
I remember I was in an audition with that guy, and I was like, why do you have to do this? You're a good actor.
You know, he had this great career, and then what happened?
Still does it. Dude, he's still, I'm just saying, all I'm saying is like, you deserve this role
right.
without having to sit
Isn't
in this
that
room
the worst?
With me.
Like, I've had that with auditions too. When I had good representation, I would go on auditions and it would be like famous people in the room and I'd be like in the waiting room and I'd be like, why am I here?
Why are they setting me up to fail? I don't even think why am I here. I'm like, give it to Justin Long.
Right.
He rocks. Have you seen Strange Wilderness? I remember I told him, I was like, dude, I love Strange. I was like, hey man, I'm a big fan of Strange Wilderness. And he was like, I'm definitely paraphrasing, but he's like, I really judge people on if they like that movie or not. And that's awesome. You know, like
oh, that's
not,
so cool.
He didn't say that in a judgmental
way. I thought he was going to be like,
he was like, that's awesome.
That's really cool. I like that movie too.
Yeah, I thought it was so good.
Didn't get enough shine.
It got a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
You know what? I feel like those zero, anything under 10% I'm into on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I love Steve Zahn. Holy shit. That
comedies don't have to be good movies. They just need to be funny.
Yeah.
Let's stop with this bullshit where comedies have to be good movies. Mm. And if they're funny and a good movie, it should win a fucking award because that's way harder than making a boring ass drama that's a good movie.
You know what? Whatever year Tommy Boy came out, the fact that it wasn't nominated for an Academy Award is like an atrocity.
94, and I couldn't agree more.
It was like, you can't get a more heartfelt, funny, like it was perfect. You know, like I understand Billy Madison not being in the awards, but like, Tommy Boy deserved fucking massive. Okay, we're in agreement. We're now
100%.
We're just saying. So you start. You're back into comedy. You're going hard. Like, what was like the moment? Because I know you got to bounce to go do comedy, which is the whole point of this world, or our world. What was the moment where you were like, I made the right choice? Like, when did you meet your wife? Meet your wife?
Okay, so
because I knew you as a party guy, and now I know you as a really sweet dad.
Oh, thank you. I still party,
no, that's
but it's just on occasion. And I was in New York, watched Justin Long break up a bum fight, and I ran into a friend of mine from high school who's one of my wife's close friends. Mm-hmm. She told her that I was in town because my wife was living in New York at the time.
Okay.
And
ex-girlfriend of poetry.
My ex-girlfriend. Fame from poetry. And we got drinks, and then we hung out for like the last 4 days of my trip every day. And then she came out here and we spent a night in Malibu at my friend's parents' house. Mm-hmm. And that was like magical. And we fell in love and it's pretty much over. We've been together ever since.
Yeah. I remember when it was just like, Sandy's married. Sandy's a kid. It's like, wait, what? Like, I want to get married. I want to like, what?
I remember talking to you and I was like, still trying to accept the fact that it was when I was coming to terms with being in a serious relationship and I wasn't like totally ready at the time. I was still couch crashing and I was still like had the romantic idea of like doing comedy, going on the road and banging chicks and all this stuff, which is so stupid in retrospect.
Yeah.
But I remember talking to you about it and you just got an SNL and I'm just like, it's gotta be great. You're like, you know, you're famous, you're banging chick. You're like, no, dude, I just want a girlfriend. I just want
love and
a family and all
well,
that.
Well, yeah, well, I moved
and
to...
And that, like, really put things in perspective
for
me.
That's so nice to hear because I got SNL after I met this girl for a month and I talked her into moving to New York with me and we got engaged and I was like, this is all I want is to... And it ended in the worst way it could possibly end. Mm-hmm. But that was in that moment, like, all I... You know, I was like, you know, I don't... Like, dude, just, like, families rock. You know, and like loving people
they
rocks.
They do.
Yeah. So I remember like mine imploded. You're like, and then I got really sad and I was like, dude, Sandy's killing it. I was just so jealous of how happy and like your family and you're such a good dad and you're just such a good dude.
Thank
so I was
you.
So stoked for
you. Know
you.
What?
And I'm still stoked.
Thank you. And I'm stoked for you.
You
just worked on what I, as a comic who has very high standards of what I consume for my own entertainment and comedy. You worked on the best comedy there is out there.
Well,
and
I barely worked on it.
Just to be a part of it.
Right. It was an idea that I pitched at Saturday Night Live that they used in their show.
That's
he's talking about Tim Robinson's show.
Yeah. I think you should leave.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about it on this podcast. Yeah.
What an honor to get to be a part of that show. But let me just tell you this. In our line of work, no matter how successful you get in it or how much you struggle, you're always going to want more or compare yourself, even though you have to fight that urge. And some people are more career focused than others. But I guess what I realized is and this is how and why I didn't fuck things up with my wife. And I definitely could have. Just being short-sighted and stubborn is that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to commit to a relationship until I, you know, I have my career's going well and I've got money and all that. But I'm still struggling in my career. I'm happy where I'm at. I would like to have more, but it's so much easier to, this is a game of persistence, and I have what a lot of people want, and I don't take that for granted. I'm really grateful, and I appreciate that every day, and I take a lot of solace in that, and I know that the rest will come because I work hard, and it's just taking a little longer, you know?
Dude, that's the best. Yeah, I mean, I've always been a little, like, mental health. Like, I mean, I was Simone Biles before Simone Biles. But, like, you know, I canceled.
You look like Simone Biles.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we get confused a lot. But it is like, it's comedy is like, people are like, you need to be nuts. I'm like, no, you should be happy. You know, you should be happy.
I'm so much funnier when I'm happy.
Yes. You know who's not funny? A mad guy, unless that's their thing.
Right.
And that's not our thing.
No.
So it's more fun to do comedy when you're excited about it.
Yeah.
That being said, Sandy, I love you.
Thank you for having me.
This was so fun. Thanks for doing it.
So much fun. I feel like I could talk to you for days.
I know. That's why I love
you. You brought up Tommy Boy, and I feel like we could talk for like a whole podcast just about the movie Tommy Boy. Not just an episode, like a whole series.
No, let's start. It's called Tommy Boys.
Yeah, Tommy Boys. Yeah.
Trademarked. Anything you want to plug right now?
I have an album. It's called Daddy Boy because while I am a father, I identify as a child. Mm-hmm. And I've got a new podcast coming out. It's going to be on my old podcast feed. So subscribe to MFers wherever you... MFers, a parenting podcast. It's not going to be called that anymore, but that's where you'll be able to find
it. Send me the links. I'll put cool. them in this episode description.
And then just my Instagram, Sandy Danto.
In this episode description, baby. Sandy, you're the best. I know
you
that,
are, man. Thank you.
Well, I know that. Well, here's how I know that you love me. You listen to every podcast. You're listening to all 200, and each one after it drops Monday at 3 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I get a text at 4:05 every Monday from you, 4:05 a.m. You had just listened to it, and you're like, I wish I had notes. That's all you text. Because you love the podcast so much.
I wish I had constructive criticism, but you can't criticize perfection.
So you obviously know, you've been waiting a long time. You're clearly aware that I always have our guest to take us out of the episode.
Yeah. So thank you guys. Like and subscribe. Rate and review.